Welcome to the College Baseball Nation podcast. I'm your host, John Peters, and I'm joined by Kyle McKelvey. This week, we have Miami head coach Gino Demare on the podcast. We're looking back at a weekend, which Tennessee once again dominated, and we're looking ahead to another week of college baseball. Let's talk college baseball. Kyle, how's it going? Good seeing you.
Yeah, it's been pretty good. It's a pretty good weekend. A little trip to Austin this weekend for a 5K, in which I paid $30 to get a free beer. You know, it's fine.
So I wouldn't say I'm a fan of running, and like the only reason I would run is so that I don't get a beer belly. So like doing a race and then immediately drinking a beer is like that. That feels like an oxymoron to me.
it's one of those things that people will be like, oh, I earned this. And so it was like an immediate, like I earned this beer immediately before. And so, yeah, it kind of brought me back to zero for the day.
So you're running for like a guilt-free beer.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. How was the time? Did you PR?
No, not a PR. I've gotten slower with age. My PR was back in my early 20s and I'm creeping up to my 30s. So yeah.
All right.
It happens.
Well, we'll forgive you for that. So a lot happened this past week, but I want to start off. I think this is just the best thing. I want to start off with this. Tennessee. I mean, Tennessee 33-1. I'm making that 31-1, 12-0 in SEC. But they have the sticky situation, as it's being called. the sticker situation with possible juiced bats allegations and like plausible deniability when it comes with it. But wherever you stand on exactly what's going on with Tennessee and their bats, you have to respect what they're doing tomorrow. So at the time of this recording, they have a midweek game coming up tomorrow against Tennessee Tech, and Tennessee announced on Twitter that they will be using wooden bats for this game. That is just the like ballsiest move ever.
It's amazing. I mean, yeah, it's like every detractor for college baseball is always like, oh, they use metal bats. And so it all, I mean, it's just like fake baseball or whatever, but all that aside, Tennessee is laying down the gauntlet and saying, fine, we don't care.
I love it. It's so good. It's like you get criticized for possibly your bat situation, and then they have the confidence and the gall to just go out there and be like, you know what?
It doesn't matter.
Screw stickers. We'll use wood. And I think they turn a midweek game into much watch baseball. And like that doesn't happen very often. There are very few midweek games that you have to like watch. Like as a casual fan, There are some games you turn on, some of those rivalry midweek games, but it's going to be easy to kind of, especially when it's Tennessee Tech, that could be a game that you just sort of check the box score of later. This is must watch baseball, in my opinion. I'm going to be tuning into this game.
Yeah. I mean, and this Tennessee Tech team I think they made the tournament in the past. They made a super regional one year, and like they have a 31 in the country WOBA. So like, it's pretty good. So it could be a really offensive matchup even with the wooden bats. I love it.
Yeah, I'm excited for it. And I want to segue into I did a bad thing on Twitter, Kyle. I a simple tweet like, upset a lot of people.
I feel like that happens on Twitter a lot. Like, yeah, it's pretty easy to do.
Nothing good happens on Twitter. By the way, follow us at College Ball.
Where everything good happens on Twitter.
Yeah, but I made the observation on the College Baseball Nation Twitter account that Southern Miss swept its road series. Meanwhile, Ole Miss and Mississippi State both got swept at home. And it generally regarded that made some fans from the state of Mississippi a little bit upset. So I dug a little bit deeper, actually, and there are six Division I teams in the state of Mississippi. Southern Miss swept. Two of the teams played each other. The other three teams all got swept. So safe to say Southern Miss was the king of the state of Mississippi this past weekend.
Yeah, it's a pretty good weekend for people from Hattiesburg.
Yeah, but nowhere else in the state.
Nope.
Jackson State also swept. They got that sweep over Mississippi Valley. Yeah. So you can be happy too, Jackson State fans.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's isn't that a conference matchup, Mississippi Valley State?
I believe so. I think that's the SWAC matchup.
Yeah. So that's like even better. It's probably an in-state rival right there. So that's kind of nice.
Sidebar, if there's a single Mississippi Valley State or Jackson State fan listening to this podcast, shout us out, because I would love that if that's the case, because to be a fan of a small baseball team like that, you gotta be a diehard fan.
Absolutely.
So let's talk about the best thing that we saw last week. Kyle, do you want to start us off with your favorite thing from the past week of college baseball?
Yeah. So UConn was playing St. John's this weekend. I can only assume that UConn swept the series.
Yep.
They swept the series.
They went 5-0. UConn went 5-0 last week and dropped in the RPI. It just kind of shows you how brutal it can be to being in a small conference when your strength of schedule is kind of gets dinged up as you go along through conference play.
And in those five games, I'm just looking this now, they scored 71 runs. That is 14 runs per game, and they allowed 14 runs total. So when you're
average runs. This is not the first time that you've literally reached over and broken out your calculator on the podcast.
I mean, I can't do math that fast when they scored 25 in a game and then like a bunch of other double digits. It's just way easier to get the calculator out. But when you average more runs per game than you give up in five games, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, that was a good week for UConn for sure. But what happened? What was special about what UConn did?
So yeah, there was a Eric Stock, which I believe is an outfielder. I'm actually not sure for UConn.
It's a great name. It's a baseball name right there.
It is a baseball Stock. Name. Yeah. he hit an inside the park home run for UConn against St. John's over the weekend, and it was electric. The call just kept elevating. Like the guy on the commentator was getting excited as he's running.
It's
second.
Like the best thing to call inside the park. Yeah. Just so excited.
Yeah, as soon as he was running second, he was like, "Oh man, this might happen." He's going all the way around, and the ball kind of got away from the right fielder, and yeah, it was the best part is that the batter. Like when he slid into home, because obviously you have to slide into home.
Of course.
He stayed laying on the ground for a few seconds afterwards because he was just so exhausted from running that far around the bases. And then got up and was smiling, of course. But yeah, so that was the best thing I saw all weekend. I don't see that many inside the park home runs, but you got to shout them out when you do.
I like it. The best thing I saw last week was actually in the midweek. Arkansas played University of Central Arkansas, so in-state matchup. Dylan Leach hit for the cycle. Cool. That's a pretty great thing to do. His second to last at bat was a home run from the left side. He got one more at bat in that game, and it's always fun when you already have a cycle and you get another at bat. See what happened, right? So he's a switch hitter, goes to the other side of the plate and hits another home run. So he hit a cycle with home runs from both sides of the plate. That's a pretty special day.
Yeah. Yeah. Now you got to level it up one more, right? And have eight at-bats, have
the double cycle.
Both sides of the plate. Yeah. I want to see that.
And don't quote me on this one. I think he came into the game with only one hit on the season. So he hadn't had a lot of playing time. Gets a five-hit day, cycle, home run for both sides of the plate. Dylan Leach, have yourself a day.
Absolutely.
So we had a lot of action in college baseball, and let's move now to our top 50. We have, once again, as always, permanent spot entrenched for Tennessee until they lose probably two series, is number one in the country, Tennessee. Number two, Miami moved up one spot. Oklahoma State, number three. Notre Dame, number four. UCLA, five. Six is Texas Tech, followed by Arkansas. Texas, number nine, Virginia. And number 10, Gonzaga. The rest of the top 50 can be found on our website, collegebaseball.info. Four teams at the bottom entering into the rankings. We have a few Sun Belt teams. So Georgia Southern at 44, Georgia State at 48. Another Big Ten team in Rutgers joining at 45. and Grand Canyon at 47, all new to the rankings. I feel like we're starting to get an idea of who the top like 10 to 15 teams are in the country. Like I'm starting to go
no
through
right this. Order, but
yeah, it's true. I think I'm pretty happy with 1 and 2. Between like 3 and like 15, I feel like we could do a lot of shuffling and I would be okay with that. I think there's a few question marks for some teams who haven't played as much conference play, maybe like, you know, the ACC gets an early start on conference play, the Big 12 and the Pac-12, maybe we're not quite deep enough into some of their conference plays to really get a clear idea of the pecking order. We have UCLA up at number 5 and UCLA has done pretty well so far in Pac-12 play, but they host Stanford this weekend. So that's going to be an opportunity for them to really establish themselves as the big dog, or it could be a chance for them to drop off. So that's this week's top 50. And now I'm excited for this next segment. We're talking about our pick'em. And Kyle, you and I have never done better.
Yeah, you can't beat perfection. And you know, and practice makes perfect, they say. And we've had 8 weeks of, 7 weeks of practice before this. And never have we done what you're about to say.
We had an 8-0 week together. And I want to say that you snuck by the skin of your teeth because Gonzaga scored 12 runs in the 7th, 8th, and 9th inning to come from behind against San Francisco. Louisville had a bomb threat and a 4-run 9th before they were able to walk that game off in the 14th inning, and a half hours after the game started. So you needed both of those to stay perfect, and you got it. But hey, I mean, results speak for themselves. We had a 4-0 week.
Yeah. Yeah. It was pretty nice. And I also had that one pointer in Miami over Virginia. And I believe that was a sweep, which I mean, that is just crazy. I don't think I expected that. Like, I think I would have expected Virginia winning the series before I would have expected Miami to sweep Virginia. Virginia's offense and pitching staff overall was just way too good. I would have thought to be swept, but the U is back.
The U is back. Yeah. It's funny. Both of us are 1 point confidence picks. You had Miami at 1 point over Virginia. I had West Virginia over Baylor. Both those teams swept. So we weren't very confident in West Virginia or Miami, but both of them earned sweeps and gave us that 1 point. So on the season, I love that you pull these stats. On the season, you're 24-8 and I'm 20-12. I'm proud of that. That looks pretty good.
Yeah. And we're within 4 games of each other, still 8 points separate us because we keep doing the same exact things.
Yeah. I think, and saying the fact that we're trying to give each other tough series to pick, this is something. I mean, you're 24-8. That's pretty darn good.
Yeah, and I probably should have given you a little harder one with Maryland, but I'm fairly confident they swept. Nope, they went 2-1.
They dropped a game, but yeah,
they won the series in the first 2 games. You were pretty solid in that, so.
Yeah,
that's fine.
So success on both sides from this week's pick'em. Let's run through a couple of results. Texas split 2 games with TCU before winning game 3. Pete Hansen threw a complete game shutout, and in a series which he throws a complete game shutout, and in a world where Texas bullpen has been struggling a little bit, I would have thought that could have led to a sweep. But TCU gets game 2 before Texas takes the final game. So Texas does get a series. They move above 500 in Big 12 play. They're just 1 game above 500. And I'm putting you on the spot right now without thinking. Think fast. Who has the highest winning percentage in conference play right now in the Big 12?
Oklahoma State.
So they're like technically in first place. They're tied with Texas Tech. But in terms of winning percentage, because it's one of those things where one team has played fewer games, West Virginia is 5-1 in conference play. So they actually have the highest winning percentage. They have 2 fewer losses and 1 fewer win than both. I don't know if that added up right. But Oklahoma State and Texas Tech are at 7-2. So they have 2 fewer wins and 1 fewer loss. But West Virginia is winning percentage leading the Big 12 after they were picked last in conference. So they're only through 2 series. So they're 5-1 overall. Based off of one source. But they were picked towards the bottom of the Big 12. So impressive stuff happening in Morgantown.
Yeah, especially with that road series victory over TCU in that back and forth few games there. Their schedule is going to get a little bit harder as they host Oklahoma State this week and then travel to Texas Tech, the two conference leaders in the next 2 weeks, and then they have Texas in a few weeks. So,
yeah, but they've set themselves up. If they go 2-4, they'll still be two games above 500. So
yeah,
just don't get swept in those series, and they're still in a really good spot come postseason time.
They'll set themselves up to be a top 4 or 5 seed in the Big 12 tournament, and I feel like that gives them a bye. I don't really know. I don't remember how the Big 12 tournament works out, but we'll get there.
Yeah, it's not quite tournament season yet. I don't have to be responsible for remembering all the crazy ways that conferences use to tease their top teams out.
Yeah, man. I hope to be able to go to that. That would be really fun.
It's yeah,
kind of close to me, so I can maybe try it.
So elsewhere in the pick'em, like I mentioned, Maryland took 2 out of 3 at Minnesota. West Virginia swept Baylor. Oregon State swept Southern California in a series that I was generally impressed by the Beavers. They looked pretty solid. This is another one of those series, though, that the level of competition, I don't think, was quite high enough to really feel like very confident that this was a reflective of a team that is top 5 caliber. But obviously a good bounce back weekend after losing the series to Stanford. And then on your end of things, we talked about Miami a little bit, and we'll get to Miami again a little while later. Talked about how Gonzaga totally came back from the depths of the depths. I lost a metaphor there. But LSU is another series that I want to talk about a little bit. Another team that had a really good weekend. They swept at Mississippi State, and LSU has had Mississippi State's number. I think it's been they've only lost, I think, one series against Mississippi State since 2003 is a stat that I read somewhere.
Wow.
LSU is hot and cold, but showed up with a sweep. And I know last week we talked about how there was only 4 teams in the SEC that were above 500, and that changed this week. Several teams now are above 500, including LSU. So with that sweep, they moved to 7-5. They're tied with Auburn, Alabama, with Arkansas just one game ahead. What do you make of this LSU team at this point in the season? Is this a team that can still compete for the SEC West? I mean, they're only one game back of Arkansas, and they get Arkansas this coming week on the road in Fayetteville. Is this a series? I mean, we might get it in the pick'em later, but is this worth considering that LSU could possibly play up to their talent potential and win the SEC West?
This would go a long way for that. But they're, I'm pretty sure you made fun of me last week for going based off of losing a series at home, winning a
that
series
is true.
At home, losing a series at home, winning.
I don't think I'm making fun of the pick. I'm making fun of the rationale for the pick.
But I mean, it happened again. That's 4 times in a row. But
yeah,
I don't know. This next one ruins that streak. They're continuing on the road. So I don't know if I can use that as a rationale this time. But yeah, I just don't get swept here. Like we always say, you can't get swept in the SEC, especially on the road. This is the one that Arkansas will really want to win. Arkansas will show out for this one. Because it's they're as much as maybe LSU fans don't want to admit it, they're definitely rivals. They definitely hate each other. I fully expect Arkansas to win the series. You might give this pick 'em to me, but I don't know. I think LSU still could finish second in the SEC West. I don't expect them to finish first since they have Georgia as one of the remaining and at Vanderbilt as one of the remaining schedules or series. But yeah, I don't know.
I'm concerned about Arkansas.
Concerned.
I don't think I would have been heading in had what just happened this last weekend had not happened. Going and losing that series to Florida wasn't a terrible series loss, but I think when you take a step back, the story that is told with the starting pitching for Arkansas is starting to get a little bit concerning. Connor Nolan looked every bit an ace, which I think is an exciting development for Arkansas. I think he threw seven innings. His season ERA now is 2.61, so he's doing all right with almost 50 innings pitched. That's what you want in an SEC Friday night workhorse. Higgins Smith has been hot and cold. His ERA is over 4.50 right now. Jackson Wiggins, ERA 4.81. The problem that happened for Arkansas last year, they never sort of established a dominant rotation, and they relied upon a really talented bullpen, including a Golden Spikes winner. But that Golden Spikes winner is gone. Kevin Copps can't come in for three inning relief appearances. And sure? I am worried that Arkansas is not, they're not performing quite to level on offense that we thought. The rotation is not quite up to snuff. I'm not sure. I'm not convinced Arkansas is the dominant team in the SEC West that they were once thought to be.
Yeah, I think that's probably, I mean, don't hit the panic button yet, but just showing a little signs of concern maybe is a little bit warranted. They still have a top 50 WOBA, team WOBA, and they have a 25th in the country ERA and 18th in walks plus hits per inning pitched. So they're doing everything that they need to overall. Maybe it's just the game to game kind of concerns that you can kind of see like cracks kind of forming. But a note about that, this series loss, this is the Arkansas's first SEC series loss since the last series of 2019. So they didn't play any in 2020. They won all 10 weekends in 2021, and they won their first three this year. So that would be 13 series in a row, which I think I saw that this is the longest streak since 1991. I didn't see who that was. But yeah, that last series loss was at A&M back in 2019. So impressive streak.
Yeah, every good thing must come to an end. And I agree. I don't want to say that I'm selling Arkansas on the year. I still think that they have a very likely chance of being a top eight seed. But if the wheels get a little bit wobbly. Now, if they fall off completely, I wouldn't be shocked. I wouldn't be shocked for them to lose another series this year. That's probably the easiest way to put it. I don't think they're going to go pulling a 2021 Arkansas.
So you're saying that Tennessee's streak is going to come to an end too? they broke the record for longest SEC win streak to start the year.
Yeah, we need a let's pull up Tennessee's schedule really quick. When is the next time that Tennessee loses a game? Let's do a fun contest right here. So we know they have a midweek game tomorrow. They then host an SEC series, Alabama, before traveling on the road at Florida. Midweek, Xavier hosts Auburn at Alabama A&M, home against Alabama A&M at Kentucky, Bellarmine, Georgia, Belmont, Mississippi State. I'll let you go first.
I think they'll lose a game this weekend. Alabama's got, well, no. I don't think they can continue sweeping. I can't see it happening, but they've proven that they can on the road, and then they just swept Mizzou, who's a pretty talented offensive team who had some leads late in those games. I think they could lose Sunday to Bama, or maybe one of the games against Florida. I think that's so. Maybe next week, maybe the week after that they lose. I don't know.
I'm going April 22nd, game one at Florida.
You think Barco?
Yeah, he's had a couple bad starts, but I think that he'll bounce back and he'll be fine. And that is the best chance that Tennessee has to lose in the near future, and it's on their road. So
I'm gonna put a point on it. For the pick'em.
All right. Yeah. What are you going with before that?
No, I'll pick a date. You want to pick a date, or you want?
Yeah. You get an extra point if you get the exact date right.
Okay, I'll say April 17th.
All right, sounds good.
And you're saying the 17th. Cool.
So the last week's pick'em's done. We went 8-0 combined. And before we go into next week's pick'em, a couple things. I want to talk about DBU. Do we have a DBU problem?
I think Dubuque has a scheduling problem.
Say more. What do you mean?
I mean, their scheduling. I guess their scheduling good is not a problem. They have a. They're scheduling too well. They have a second in the RPI, but they haven't really done anything like incredibly well on the weekends. They have that series win at home against Maryland, which is great. They have that series sweep of Southern Miss, who we have ranked pretty high, but that's pretty much it. They've also lost a series at home to start the year against Southeast Missouri.
And that series to Wofford.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, that series to Wofford, too.
Yeah, so let's take a step back. Our DBU problem is the fact that we have them ranked at 35. And that's
right.
That's quite a bit lower than they've been ranked in some other places. So I think the rationale that you're building is sweep of Southern Miss is a great sweep. Mm-hmm. Winning a series against Maryland, solid series. We have Maryland ranked above them right now. We always give a little bit of benefit of the doubt to cold weather teams playing on the road early in the season. I think those losses to SEMO and to Wofford are not top tier losses. I think that they, like you mentioned, DBU did a really good job scheduling teams that were probably going to go on to win a lot of games in smaller conferences, like a SEMO or like a Wofford. And RPI loves that. Like RPI is all about your opponent's records. And Wofford's won 25 games plus or something already. And SEMO is right there with it. So that's what's leading to what I think is a little bit of an inflated strength of schedule in RPI. So that's our case against our DBU's resume. But a team is more than their resume. They're also the talent and the way that talent has been producing. And I think I can make a case that DBU, in terms of statistics, is also not a top 25 team right now. So DBU's ERA as a staff ERA is 4.64. And I think they're lacking a shutdown bullpen guy. Their team batting average is 87th in the country at 282, which is pretty solid batting average. But they've struck out 275 times this year, which is in the bottom 100 in the country in that statistic. And it's not like they're walking a ton. They've walked 141 times. They're striking out way more than they're walking. In this era of baseball, it's not that bad if you have power. And they've hit 47 home runs and 65 doubles this year. So that's a decent amount of power. I don't know if that's sustainable. So my concern, offense is a little too power heavy, striking out a ton against not the most strikeout pitchery teams in the country. Southern Miss strikes out a lot of people. And Maryland strikes out a good amount of people. But the teams that they play, the staff they've played, are not all are not some of the top strikeout teams in the country. So that strikes me as a little bit worrisome.
Yeah, and like when they play teams with really, really good pitching staffs, can they keep up these extra base hits that they keep getting and home runs and stuff? But like I think you mentioned that Southern Miss has a really good pitching staff. They don't allow a ton of extra base hits. I think they're second in the country in home runs allowed. But that series sweep I'm going through right now looks like DBU score hit. No home runs there. No home runs there. So they hit two home runs on the weekend out of three games. They can get it done without hitting the long ball. So if they can keep that up, then they'll continue to rise. Their RPI might drop, but we might, like, if they can get their stats up, then we'll think they're a better team. I think overall, like, their resume might not improve much, but I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, they've only scored double digit runs five times all year, which is against the schedule that they've played, not a great sign in my opinion. Mm-hmm. But I think and so immediately once I built this case in my mind for against Dallas Baptist in terms of resume, I did start looking at some of the teams above them and what they've done. And I think one of the biggest issues in terms of where we ranked Dallas Baptist is probably the ACC's fault, because we have about it feels like 15 ACC teams, even though there's only 14, all ranked right there in the 25 to 30 range. And I think we're going to get some more clarity on the ACC. Like, there's so many teams that are right around 500. And as we move on, North Carolina's lost a lot of games recently. Is that a trend of things to come, or will they bounce back? I mean, NC State has been up and down all year. Virginia Tech has been on a really hot streak. Is they're just they're catching fire right now, and they're going to cool off? And as we get some of those questions answered, I think DBU will find a place a little bit higher in our rankings, because not all these ACC teams can keep winning. And some of them, and when you're playing that ACC schedule, your weaknesses will get exposed.
You have, so your CBR that you run, that program that you run that can predict kind of postseason rankings, it has Dallas Baptist at 7, because I think it's pretty heavily RPI based.
Yep.
Because that's what the committee uses, basically just predicting what the committee is going to do. So the committee uses RPI a lot. And so they're right now, Dallas Baptist is 7 in CBR. So I'm guessing they'll drop a little bit as this goes on, because their RPI will drop. But this, your algorithm that you've run has correctly predicted a lot of the hosts. So it's a good chance that Dallas Baptist could end up hosting, maybe like a low host, or maybe like a high 2 or something.
Yeah. So CBR, for those listening who aren't familiar, yeah, it's a postseason predictor algorithm, but it's largely based on the RPI, with a few other key factors, including conference record and conference RPI, and a couple other things baked into it. And Dallas Baptist right now is ranked 2 in the RPI and ranked 7 in the CBR. And because it's still only the midway point in the season, we know RPIs aren't perfect. So because the CBR is based so much on the RPI, CBR is not going to be perfect. I think what you can take away, though, is that delta, the fact that there's 5-spot difference between the CBR and the RPI. So what that's indicating is that there's something on Dallas Baptist's resume that the committee probably won't like. And I can tell you, it's conference RPI. Missouri Valley is doing pretty well in terms of conference RPI, but the committee has a very, very, very high weight on conference RPI when it comes to predicting, or when it comes to placing teams in the NCAA tournament. All right, so before we get too far away from it, let's go back and let's do the week 9 pick'em. Wow.
All right.
That's wild to say. Week 9. Here we are, crossing over the halfway point. It's a big time.
All right. And I think I give you the first series.
You do? I'm on something of a hot streak, Kyle. I don't know if you've heard.
Hey, I am too. Yeah, right off the bat, I'm going to go ahead and give you, let's say, Texas Tech traveling to TCU. Road team, probably favored a little bit. They're Texas Tech is pretty high in our rankings and RPI and everything, traveling to Fort Worth in a little bit of a rivalry series, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I feel like with the Big 12, it's always hard to know exactly who doesn't like whom, but I mean, with all the Texas schools, they're safe to say.
No one in Texas likes each other.
Yeah. There's some bad blood, I'm sure, between Texas Tech and TCU. I think that one of the fun things that happened last week is that Texas Tech played 2 midweek games at GCU and lost them both. And then they come home and sweep a Big 12 series against Kansas State. So, I mean, you could say that Texas Tech wasn't focused. I don't know. It just wasn't as amped to play on the road at GCU, and that they refocused. But I think that my takeaway from it is that this Texas Tech team has flaws. There's a lot of things going for it, and they figured a lot in terms of the pitching staff, which is now actually very impressively at a 4.41 ERA, which for a pitching staff that has to play a lot of games in Lubbock, that's a very good ERA for a Texas Tech team. And a lot of the statistics there are very favorable to winning games in Lubbock, like that 364 strikeouts for that staff. And the fun thing is that strikeouts travel. So if you can strike guys out in Lubbock, you should be able to strike guys out in Fort Worth. My inclination is to go with Texas Tech in this one at one point. I'm not convinced about TCU at this point. I think that TCU played Texas really well. But give me the Red Raiders.
At one point?
Yeah, at one point. I don't really like this. So
yeah, it's a tricky one. I think I would pick Tech also, just based on, I don't know, their offense being able to travel. And they've shown it. They have a fun one-off this week. Maybe it's like a season-long thing. I don't know, against Oklahoma. And Warren Nolan's website calls it the Red Dirt Rivalry. I've never heard that, which it sounds awesome. They play in Amarillo, which is maybe a little bit halfway between the two. It's hard. It's, yeah. I can't really remember. But yeah.
My bet.
Yeah.
Cool. So I'm going to give you, whenever I was going through my power rankings of toughest series, a lot of ACC series kept coming up.
Yeah,
because it's so hard to know exactly who's the best in the ACC. And I want to give you Louisville at Florida State.
I was hoping you'd give me this one.
You're hoping for this one?
Yeah, I was, but you've already given it to me, so.
All right, that's fine. I feel like I didn't want to pick this one. I don't want to pick any of the ACC series. I feel like we could just do whole ACC pick 'em and we would struggle with it.
Yeah, maybe we should do it.
Well, it's too late. You gave me Texas Tech.
Dang. Okay. Yeah, so I picked, this is another one of your favorite things to do, is give me the road favorite on the favorite on the road. Florida State's struggled a little bit as of late. I don't know, playing a really good Notre Dame team at home, even though they got swept, they competed in all of those games, losing by a combined like 5 runs. That Georgia Tech series on the road was like back and forth to start, and then Georgia Tech shut them down on Sunday. So
yeah, Parker Messick got kind of lit up for the first time all year.
Sure did. I think I put Louisville, and I went 3 points just because Louisville's on a really hot streak. They quelled the bomb threat and came back and won that series against North Carolina. So go ahead and give me Louisville for 3 points.
All right, I'm gonna go on record and say Florida State's winning the series.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right. That is bold. I wish I could have given it to you, but it's too late. Next for me to give to you. You can pick Clemson at Wake Forest. It's kind of like a bottom middle of that ACC's teams. And Wake Forest offense is, of course, Wake Forest. They're really good.
Yeah, wait a second. You're calling Wake Forest at 9-6, which is good for like tied for third, a bottom of the ACC team.
We don't have them ranked, do we?
We do have them ranked.
We have them ranked today.
Have them ranked, Kyle. you gotta study up. We have them at ranked number 18 right now.
Okay.
Is the highest ranking amongst the polls that I saw out there.
Missed over them in our skim. Maybe my spreadsheet messed up. Blame it on the data.
Blame it on the spreadsheet for sure. It's never user error.
No.
I think that we also actually left Clemson ranked at, I think, 49 in our rankings, even though Clemson is 2-9 in ACC play. And it felt weird doing that because I feel like they, at this point, I would say there's a better chance they don't make the tournament than they do. And this series is, they're getting to the point where they're basically, they're approaching do or die with a lot of these series. With that said, I think it's die time for Clemson. So give me Wake Forest. The offense is going to be too much for Clemson. And this is RIP Clemson Tigers postseason hopes this weekend. May they rest in peace.
How many points?
2 points.
2 points. So you're calling them dead, but you're not giving it 4 points.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
All right. I'm gonna leave the ACC for a minute. I'm gonna give you East Carolina at UCF because this is the first time in many years where East Carolina is not the runaway favorite, and UCF is tied for first place with Tulane at 5-1 in the American, and ECU is at 4-2. So this is a kind of a reckoning moment for both of these teams. UCF has a chance to establish itself as a real top tier contender, and East Carolina can remind everyone why they've won the American every year forever.
Yeah, I'm. This is kind of a one of those trickier ones, but I don't know. I think I really like this UCF team. Their pitching staff has been pretty solid. Their offense is kind of top 100 in pretty much everything. They do strike out a lot. And ECU does like strike out opposition a lot. They're 14th in the country in strikeouts as a pitching staff. And UCF is 279th in strikeouts for an offense. So
they strike out more than twice as much as they walk.
That's pretty bad. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's at home. I'm going to go ahead and take UCF for 1 point. I have a good feeling on Florida teams lately. So,
as you just picked against Florida State.
Yep. I have a good feeling. I don't say that they're all like that they're all good. I just know
how they're going to do. Okay. You just got your finger on the state of Florida baseball right now.
Yes.
You know exactly who's going to be winning and who's losing series.
100%.
Excellent. All right. Good to know where you're at.
Well, you can take, since I am the Florida expert, you can take Florida at Vanderbilt.
Yeah, this one's easy for me. And I could definitely, I think it is easy. I think that I am not ready to buy into the like anti-hype around Vanderbilt. I think Vanderbilt is still, I think Vanderbilt is probably going to finish second in the SEC East, even though they have Georgia has a pretty good head start on them. This offense is incredibly talented and the pitching staff is good enough. Give me Vanderbilt for three. Yeah,
you have three and four left.
Three.
Okay.
Florida's too inconsistent for me.
Yeah, Vanderbilt's pretty bad lately, too. They lost like five in a row SEC games for the first time in a long time, too. Just wild.
Yeah. I mean, it seems like everyone has a Tennessee hangover. Vanderbilt and Ole Miss both have lost series F. I don't know if that's true. No, Ole Miss bounced back. But it seems like once you play Tennessee in your season, it gets a lot tougher for you.
Yeah, they need to switch to wooden bats for SEC play.
So I'm going to go, I think, I want to put this series in there because I think it should be talked about. I'm going to do Stanford at UCLA for you.
Excellent. I was hoping you would.
All right, you're playing mind games over here.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, this is a matchup of really good pitching staffs versus not that good offenses. I think Stanford has been playing a lot better, maybe closer to expectations lately. But this, I really like this UCLA team as a whole. They do have a high ceiling, and I think they're playing up to it right now.
UCLA did just lose Thatcher Hurd, one of their freshman phenom starting pitchers. So Friday. So without him for this last weekend, so they made it through winning 2 out of 3, but they did drop a game to Utah, maybe in part because of it.
Maybe. That's possible. They also lost a random Saturday game to Harvard early on, which is not great. So I think it just happens. That's just kind of a Pac-12 thing.
Speaking of going on the record for stuff, I think the Ivy League is surprisingly good this year.
Yeah. I mean, if anyone can beat Penn, then they've beaten teams who beat an SEC team on the road.
But it's not just that. Like, if you go across, I think Columbia won a game. Columbia won a game at Houston, and they won another game at a power team. And then, yeah, Harvard won a game at UCLA. Because all these Ivy League teams are traveling early in the year, they ended up playing quite a few interesting road games. So yeah, Columbia also beat Baylor on the road. They took two games at Davidson and they won a game at Stetson. And there's not a lot of series wins in there, but those are some meaningful game wins for a small conference school.
Are you telling me there's going to be a two-bid league in Ivy this year?
No, I'm not telling you that.
It could be close.
I think the thing that could happen that would be very, very unique. I think there's a chance that the Ivy is a 3 seed. I don't think it's going to happen. But right now, Penn is at 38 in the RPI. Their RPI is going to drop a decent amount. But if they stay nearly perfect, they could still end up with a top 40, top 50 RPI. If that's the case, they could end up as a 3 seed. I don't think it's going to happen, but that they have a chance to do that, which would be pretty cool.
That's if they go 19-2 in Ivy League play.
Well, like. So far they've gone 6-2. So yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But they've gone through. So, I mean, this weekend, I think Harvard is, I mean, we're getting really deep into the weeds of the Ivy League right now. And I'm sure this is what the people want, but I think Harvard is, I think, one of the top competition in the Ivy League for Penn. And they only got to play 2 games because of weather. They traveled to Harvard. They won game 127-6. Like Penn is doing pretty darn well. And the next couple of weeks are against Cornell and Brown, both way below 500. They go at Yale, which will be a tough series. Princeton, another team way below 500. But if Penn can win that at Yale series, I think there's a good chance that they end up with, you know, 35 plus wins and have a pretty solid resume.
Yeah. Well, it's only fitting that we talked about the Ivy League when we're talking about Stanford and UCLA.
Yeah.
Both pretty smart West Coast teams or West Coast schools.
Yes, Stanford, the Harvard of the West, and UCLA, the Penn of the West.
Right, that's exactly it.
That's what they always say.
But yeah, all that said, I'm going UCLA, but I have 2 points left, so I'm going to do that. I could see Stanford winning this one, and it would be if they take advantage of Friday night. The UCLA pitcher that you said that was out, but
yeah, Alex Williams too for Stanford on Friday night. I mean, he threw 8 innings. I think he gave up 1 run this last weekend. He's been an ace. Like he's done a really good job for Stanford, so he will definitely keep them in the game on Friday.
So your turn. You can pick a struggling, skidding Ole Miss traveling to Columbia, South Carolina.
I don't like this. Why did you do this? man, I think if Ole Miss was ranked, this would be money in the bag for South Carolina because they only show up when they play top ranked teams.
Exactly.
but because Ole Miss has fallen out of favor, give me the Rebs on the road. I mean, despite all of their struggles, they still have a pretty darn good offense. And you can't really say the same for South Carolina and the pitching staff. ERA over 5 for South Carolina, and that's due in part to injuries. But yeah, give me Ole Miss. But man, this was a sneaky series to throw in at the end. Nice job, Kyle.
Thank you.
And you know what? I don't think this equals quite the same sneaky status, but I think this is a fun series. So I want you to talk about Oklahoma State at West Virginia. We need to get a little bit more Big 12 love in here because I think that we're gonna learn about the top half of the Big 12 a lot this week.
Yeah. So yeah, this is, you said at West Virginia, right?
Yep. This one's in the Big 12 land of West Virginia.
And it's only going to get more spread out by adding in a few years when they add in those 4 teams. But yeah, let's see. West Virginia, like you said, is leading the Big 12 in win percentage this year. They just swept Baylor, who is kind of struggling as of late. And they also won that series at TCU, which is impressive, even if TCU seems to be struggling this year.
They had a walk-off walk against Baylor, which is always a fun thing.
That is great. That's walk-off wild pitches are even more fun, but yeah, that's pretty great.
I think, unfortunately, walk-off walk is like one of the staples of college baseball.
Yeah.
that's a thing that you see very rarely in MLB.
And a lot of times they load the bases by walking. And they walk another one. Yeah, it's like really sad, like, when you hear it.
I can't remember if it was this game. I don't remember. I think it was a Louisville game. But yeah, it was. But when you do, like, when you have runners on like second and third or something with one out, and you're like, oh yeah, we're gonna intentionally walk that guy, so we have a force in every play. I play, and then it's like four pitch walk on the next batter, you lose the game or something.
Yeah, that's the worst when you see that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think I'm going to pick Oklahoma State in this. I have 4 points, a four pointer left, so that's what I have to give it. But I wouldn't be surprised if West Virginia wins this one. It's at home. They just won that series against Baylor, swept that series. But Oklahoma State doesn't really have a lot of blemishes on their resume this year. Only lost one weekend, and it was a sweep at home against Gonzaga. But they've, I mean, travel all over. They won that series at Vanderbilt. They have that series win against Kansas State just this weekend, which, I don't know, middle of the pack, Big 12. They won two midweeks against Arizona State. Otherwise, their resume is kind of light, I guess. I don't know. But I would go with Oklahoma State here.
And that's something I think is really interesting to think about moving forward is Oklahoma State's resume, I think, was really buoyed by Vanderbilt, that series win at Vanderbilt. And if Vanderbilt loses this weekend to Florida, for instance, then and depending on how Oklahoma State does, we might have to start reevaluating the resume. I think that in terms of talent, I'm fairly convinced about some of the guys there at Oklahoma State, but the resume is going to be a lot weaker if Vanderbilt doesn't get better.
Yeah, absolutely. This this past weekend against Oklahoma was a fun rivalry series. Oklahoma scored two in the top of the ninth on Friday to take the opener, and then it was a walk-off for Oklahoma State on Saturday. It was kind of a back and forth game on Sunday.
Yeah, they set the record for Obrate to 7,000 something fans, so pretty big weekend awesome. There. Yeah.
But yeah, so, gave me Oklahoma State.
I like that. It's a solid pick. And my roundup is Ole Miss over South Carolina, Vanderbilt over Florida, Wake Forest over Clemson, and Texas Tech over TCU. You have Oklahoma State over West Virginia, Louisville over Florida State, UCLA over Stanford, UCF over East Carolina. You have an 8-point lead in the confidence interval points, 57-49. So here's to hoping I make a comeback.
You said that last few weeks, but
yep, nothing going yet. So the last thing that we have coming up is we have an interview with head coach of Miami, Gino Demare, and I really enjoyed talking with him. I think I was impressed by the way that, I mean, I've been obviously very impressed by the way his team's been playing on a 13-game winning streak. And I think that my takeaway from it was that if Miami's going to get better, it's going to be based off the performance of their starters. And so we saw Carson Palmquist go six innings on Friday, and that did a really nice job setting up the bullpen. And so it seems like Gino Demare is really focused now on finding his starters and pushing them to go the extra innings.
Yeah, and one thing in there, he talks about how they really want to focus on the midweek they have against FAU this week. That they do really, he said that they've done really well under him in midweeks, and that's true. We did some research in the last since 2019 when he started there. They are 26-6 overall in the midweeks, 18-2 at home, and this, I think this FAU game is at home. 8-4 on the road. They're good for about one loss on the road per year in the midweeks, and they're already good for that this year. So if they have to do another road one during this year, they will win. You can go to Vegas and put money on that. But yeah, this is obviously a really good team, and we were really excited to talk to him after that series sweep against Virginia.
All right, up next on the podcast is Miami head coach Gino Demare. Up next on the College Baseball Nation podcast, we are joined by Miami head coach Gino Demare. Gino, thanks for joining the podcast.
Thank you, guys. Thanks for having me.
So you guys are on a 13-game winning streak right now, 26-6 overall, 13-2 in ACC play. Just coming off a sweep of Virginia. I mean, there's a whole lot going right for you guys right now. How's the energy around the team?
Obviously good. Yeah, it's going well. Hopefully, I think I spoke to the team after yesterday's win and just, told them, I'm sure we're going to move up in the rankings pretty good. And we're a little bit past halfway point. We got to make sure we stay grounded, stay humble. You know, we can't lose focus of what we're trying to do. We got some really tough series coming up, tough games. And, you know, the last poll of the year is the one that matters. And that's something that I, you know, I've stressed to the team before, and they know that. So I think we're in a good place. I hope so. As a coach, you're always concerned about many things, but obviously happy about the team and the way they're playing. We still have a lot of room for improvement. The one thing you just don't want to see as a coach and your players is, you know, that way I term it is don't start patting yourself on the back and think you got it all figured out, because when this game will bite you in the butt. So we just got to keep, you know, keep going at it. But definitely, I think the guys are handling it very well up to this point.
So perhaps the most impressive thing about this last weekend was Virginia, when they came into town, was the best statistical offense in the country. You held them to just 11 runs across the three games. And there's a lot of arms for Miami that you could talk about that had really good weekends for you. But let's start with Carson Palmquist. He's your Friday night guy. He struggled a little bit early on with command, but was able to get you through six innings without giving up an earned run. I mean, set the tone for the weekend. Talk a little bit about his performance.
Yeah, so you're right. You know, the sixth innings was key. Early on, and I can't remember exactly, but he was really high up on pitch count after two, three innings. And I'm sitting there looking and talking to JD, our pitching coach, and going, my goodness, I'm not you hate to have to go to your pen on Friday, game one of a three-game series, early. You know, your Friday guy, you want him to give you, you know, six, seven innings. And that's something that we haven't done. That's one of the things we need to do a better job with our rotation. Guys need to give us more innings in their starts. Carson has thrown very well, but just needs to be a little bit more efficient. Now, he's a strikeout guy, so tendency for strikeout guys, they're going to pitch count is going to get a little higher. But, you know, it was key for him, I think. I'm right saying it's the fifth inning and sixth innings, he was able to be very efficient, which allowed us to get six innings out of him and then turn it over to the back end of the bullpen. Because, you know, we threw a lot of guys this weekend, but you can't, you know, just it's tough if you're not getting those starts from, you know, efficient starts from your rotation guys. So that was big, him getting to get to six innings, because it didn't look good after the pitch count was so high early. But he threw good. You know, I thought, just watching back, obviously his fastball is what sets the tone for everything, but he pitches off that. But his off-speed stuff was good, changeup and breaking ball. He was throwing and getting swinging misses and strikeouts with those pitches too as well. So, and he's just such a tough guy to face. It's just hard to duplicate, you know, preparing, I'm sure, for an opposing team. A guy like Carson, it's very hard to do that, to get your hitters to get a look at that same, you know, funky, unique delivery that he has. So, you know, that was, you're right, good way of putting it. A great set to the tone setter for the series.
Yeah, I know you had an on-air interview after the fourth inning, I believe, and you talked about how you wanted him to get you two more innings. And with the way his pitch count was going, I think it would be easy to be skeptical, but he was able to do that. He did it with establishing the fastball early and then mixing in some of his secondary pitches later on. Can you talk a little bit about what was able to get him through that fifth and sixth inning? And were you coaching him? Anything that you said to him between that fourth, fifth inning that let him settle down? Or did he just get locked in?
No, I didn't say anything to him. And that's, you know, JD normally is talking to the pitchers when they come back in between innings. He usually sits down with them when he needs to, and they talk. But no, I don't think there was anything in particular. I think he just had better command. I think got ahead. You know, it's hard to remember exactly right now, just looking back Friday, but I sure it was him getting ahead on the hitters, doing a better job of that, and getting some contact early in the counts. You know, it's just one of those things where he was just missing some pitches. He wasn't missing by a lot, but he was missing. And therefore, you know, he was getting deep into counts early on in the outing. So I think it was just more of, you know, pitching to contact and throwing strikes.
So you mentioned that you want your starters to go a little bit longer, but that bullpen has been really established lately. Gage Zeal and Andrew Walters have really held down the back of the bullpen, and Walters still hasn't given up a run. How has this duo played a role in y'all's winning streak?
Well, and that's kind of why I said, you know, you like them to go a little bit deeper, you know, turn the game over to those guys. Those guys have been great. The two guys you mentioned, Gage and Walt, have been outstanding. But to me, maybe the biggest key of our success during this little streak we got going is the other guys. Because we have that. I guess that's the good side of our starters not going as long as maybe I'd like, is you've had guys like Torres and Gallo and Dubberly and McFarland and, you know, Schlesinger and Gates. Those guys have all gotten opportunities and they've taken advantage of it. They've given us good outings. And so, as important, no doubt, Gage and Walt have been in the back end, it's those other guys, to me, that's been the biggest key of why we've been as successful as we've had.
Yeah. All right. Well, switching up a little bit, offensively, y'all pieced together 6 runs on Friday and 5 runs on Saturday before exploding for 15 on Sunday. And CJ Kafis was on base 8 times over the weekend in the leadoff spot. His on-base percentage is well over 480. How important has he been to setting the table for your offense?
You know, it's interesting. Going into the season, I honestly didn't know who was going to lead off for us. And, you know, when you play these inter-squad games in the fall, and then, you play them, you know, the few that you play, obviously, before you start the season, gets on you quick. The week going in, I really didn't know. And we always play an alumni game the week before we open up. So it's the first time really I made out a lineup that we didn't play a fall game. We were supposed to play FAU and got rained out. So we never did play a game against any outside competition. So the alumni game, I set the lineup and I just said, let's just do Kafis and see how it goes. And unbelievable. He's been as good a leadoff hitter as I can recall here in a while. And he just does everything. He's, like you said, he gets on base. He's leading our team in hitting. He's leading our team in runs. He's a clutch hitter. He's got a lot of RBIs. He's one of our top RBI guys. He's our best. Him and Patelli are our two best base runners. You know, he's leading us in stolen bases. Him and Dom do a great job of reading balls in the dirt. And he's arguably one of the best defensive first basemen we've had here. And so he's just a great, great baseball, all-around baseball player.
And then a little bit farther down in your lineup, Yo-Yo Morales has been very, very accomplished for you in the 3 holes last weekend. He hit a couple of home runs. But also on the field, I mean, he started a big league double play at the hot corner. He's really doing everything for your team right now. How has he developed as one of the leaders of this Miami team?
Well, he is. He's one of our captains. We have 2 captains, him and Jake Garland. And I was saying this after the game last night, actually. I had dinner with my family and our pitching coach and his family. And I was telling him, I almost feel like Yo-Yo might be one of the best leaders we've had here in a long time. He just, guys respect him. They look up to him. He carries himself with as much confidence as about any player I can recall. And he's, you know, he just handles himself so well. When things don't go his way, you never see him complain. You never see him get down or drop his head. I always say a guy that's got good confidence, watch him when he's not doing well and things aren't going his way. And he's always got that positive, confident attitude. And being arguably our best player, our most talented offensive player, he is, you know, guys look up to that and guys respect that. And that is so important for a team. And he's a huge, huge reason why the team has had as much success as just how he carries himself. And so he's been great. I've said this before, he's been the third hole hitter since he got here, came on campus, and he'll be the third hole hitter here until he leaves. Cause he's got that kind of mindset that, he's just so confident.
And speaking of that confidence, I think something that it's a little bit hard to get from the outside is this team a team with a chip on its shoulder? Is this a team with confidence? Like what is the attitude around the team? Because there's obviously a confidence on the field, but can you talk a little bit about where that confidence comes from?
Well, it comes from winning. It comes from being successful. I think, you know, I asked a question, some people asked questions early on about the identity of the team. I can't answer that. How are you going to know the identity of the team? You haven't played any games yet. The identity of a team, to me, gets defined over the season. And it's still being defined. It's still a work in progress. But right now, to date, 32 games into the season, I would say, to me, the identity of the team is it's a team. The guys play very well together. There's no individuals. There's no selfishness. Guys are all supporting each other. You know, there's a lot of guys you can pick from on any given game that are contributing in big ways and helping the team win, whether it's hitters or pitchers on defense or base running or somebody stepping up the hit or moving guys over or, you know, the bullpen. Like I talked about those guys that haven't, you know, been mentioned a whole lot, but those other guys other than Walt and Zeal, the other guys that have stepped up. And that's what it takes. That's what it takes. If you're going to go far into this and be the last team standing, it's got to be a team effort from a lot of guys. And to me, that's kind of the identity of this team is it's what a team should be. And everybody kind of pulling for each other and everybody picking each other up.
So this week you get FAU to travel across town. And then before you travel to Virginia Tech, what does the preparation look like this week to make sure your team is geared back up to play a very hot Virginia Tech team?
Well, like you said, we've got to be ready for FAU. We play them before we go to Virginia Tech. Right. The midweek games, we've been good. We've been good, knock on wood, but we have been good since I've been the head coach. I don't know what our record is, but it's got to be pretty good. And a big part of that is making sure these guys are ready to play. Because those midweek games are tough. The crowds are smaller. The game's an early hour earlier. You're not going to have as many people in the ballpark. It's a school night. You know, they got class that day. And then, of course, the next day, you got to get up and go to class. And so it's very important that our guys, when they get to the ballpark, are in the right frame of mind. We get them out early and do some early work. You know, game days, we sometimes accomplish more on game days than we do in practice, just getting prepared for the game because you don't practice much. I mean, you got to take Mondays off in our sport and, you know, we're playing Tuesday. So, and Wednesday this week will be a travel day and then, of course, practice up in Blacksburg. So Tuesday, like we normally do, we'll get out early and do some things on the field. We'll do some things in the indoor to get prepared for FAU.
And one of the reasons you've had some success in the midweek recently is the pitching of Jake Garland. Can you talk a little bit about how you anticipate using him moving forward? Because he's put together a string of a couple good starts here.
Well, he is the epitome of being efficient. You know, Jake is a ground ball pitcher, pitches to contact. If you're a defensive guy, you love, especially an infielder, you love playing behind Jake because you know you're going to get a lot of action. And with that comes double plays. And he has done a good job of going deep in the game. As a matter of fact, that was a big outing that he threw on Wednesday against FIU because he gave us 8 innings. And what that did is it kept our bullpen fresh for the weekend, which we had to go to right out of the gate on Friday, you know, in the last 3 innings. And of course, we used a lot of our bullpen over the weekend. So those outings are huge, the midweek guys. If you got a guy that can go deep like Jake has done, There's another example of being a team and a guy that's in his role of what he does as a midweek starter and being able to pitch the way he does and being efficient, going deep in the games is huge, huge for us.
Then last question for you. You've mentioned that we're at the halfway point in the season and the only poll that really matters is the one that comes out after the College World Series. How do you handle goal setting before the season and during the season? And are you thinking long-term or is your team just hyper-focused on the here and now?
Well, I mean, there are goals you set. The goals early in the season, there's no doubt. We want to be at the end of the year. You want to try to give yourself a chance to host and to host not but a super regional. In order to do that, you need to be basically in the top 8. So that's something that the kids know and we're aware of. That would be the ideal situation. We'd like to be able to play in our ballpark. We have a great ballpark, got great atmosphere. We've done well over the years when we host regionals and super regionals. Doesn't mean that we can't win going on the road, but you'd like to have that route would be the better route. And so the guys are aware of that. Now, once you get into it, you got to be locked in on the present, the now, and I think our guys have done that. We haven't, I don't think we've gotten ahead of ourselves. And again, a good sign of that is those midweek games. When you see teams come out and they play flat and they're not really into it, to me, that's a sign of probably not being focused on the game and kind of looking maybe ahead of the weekend series, because there's so many big ones. Just in our conference, you know, every weekend is a big one. The teams are so competitive now in our conference and so deep that you got to be ready. So you can't look ahead. You got to make sure you're focused on the present and you know, winning that game that day you're playing and being ready that day. So that's most important for me, to make sure our players are in that mindset going forward and continue to develop and get better. We're still not playing the way we want to play. And I always tell the guys, you need to get better, better, and better, so that at the end of the season, hopefully we're playing as good a baseball as anybody in the country. And so there's still a lot of room for improvement, even though here we've won, you know, 13, I guess it is, games in a row.
Well, best of luck the rest of the way for you guys in the tough ACC. And thanks so much for joining the podcast, Coach.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to the College Baseball Nation podcast. If you're still listening, that's great. Most people don't listen to this. So welcome to the end of the podcast. Things that you can do. I mean, if you're listening right now, you must be a pretty big fan of the College Baseball Nation podcast, or you've fallen asleep listening to us. But if you're the first one, go rate and review our podcast on Apple Podcasts, because that would be really great for us. Also, follow us on social media at College Ball Nat. Thanks, and have a great week.